I am the truth vine and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it so that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me.
Good morning. Good looking crowd today. Must have heard I was bringing meatballs, huh? The lesson has one point today. Oh, you thought that would get applause and cheers. Well, that's a good point. Thank you, Sam. Touche. It's all about connections. Turn to your neighbor and tell them it's all about connections. All right. That's the lesson today. So let's jump right into it. In Colossians chapter 2, beginning at verse 18, we read this. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you for the prize. Such a person goes into great detail about what he has seen, and his unspiritual mind puffs up in him with idle notions. He has lost connection with the head. He has lost connection with the head from whom the whole body, supported and held together by its ligaments and sinews, grows as God causes it to grow. Now in this passage here, we have a warning from Paul. Paul is describing some characteristics, if you will, of false teachers and the things that false teachers are trying to do, if you will, to disconnect you from God. You know, if you think about this, the warning here from Paul is just quite simply this. Do not lose your connection with Jesus. Now, how many of you are old enough to remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom? Wasn't that a great show? What was the guy of that? Perkins? Marlon Perkins, okay. And I just loved, the descriptions he used to make. And I mean, I was a pretty young guy when that was still on. But it wasn't just hit that program, the Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom, but other programs like that, that we would hear things like this, that there is security in the herd. You know, and how many times we've seen those wildlife programs when, for example, maybe a pack of wolves is attacking a herd. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to get somebody, one of the animals in that herd, whatever herd they might be attacking, to get them off away from the herd. Because there's security in the herd, right? I mean, that's the point here. And that's just another way to talk about Paul's warning there in Colossians chapter 2. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, the security that we have, if you will, in the herd. But maybe another way to say that is to talk about how important those connections are that we have with Jesus. So our warning is not to lose our connection with the herd. Now, Jesus warns us about this too, is that we have... Well, I'm going to back up here. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. I got to tell you something that's happened. I'm still kind of shaky over it. I was driving here this morning and it dawned on me that I forgot my notes. Or I feared that I forgot my notes. Because I looked in the back seat where I would have usually put them and they weren't there. And then it dawned on me, oh, did I put them in the trunk? And I almost pulled over. And I thought, we're too far along. If I did forget them, there's nothing I could do about it anyways. So then I'm like, okay, I'm prepared here well enough to get through this. We'll be okay. I've got my PowerPoint. But so I'm just a little bit discombobulated. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Jace, you like that word? See, it fits, doesn't it? If you're visiting with us today, I want to just let you know, I've impressed Jace with my skill in the King's English, my ability to create words. But I can't take credit for discombobulated, but I do use it a lot. A couple of weeks ago, I got a chance to go to the Chicago area to go to a conference, and you were aware of that because I wasn't here on that particular Sunday when that conference started. And I had an opportunity to, one evening, myself and a bunch of teachers from the district where I work at, we jumped on the L from Deerfield, which is the northern suburbs, and took the train into downtown Chicago. I'd never been to Chicago, and it was exciting. We came into Union Station, and boy, my eyes were wide open by that time. I'd already seen things that you just don't see in Independence or Manchester or even necessarily here in Waterloo and Cedar Falls. But we went and we found, you know, what do you do when you go to Chicago? You got to eat pizza, right? So we were told where a good pizza joint was, and we found it, and then we started walking across the city heading towards the Navy Pier. But when my daughter and wife threatened me that if I don't come home with pictures, I'm in trouble. Because I go to these conferences frequently and I see all kinds of neat things. A couple of years ago, I got to feed a manatee. Some people knew where to go, and this was out in the wild. And what are you shaking your head for? I'm getting to that. Just calm down. They're so anxious. I'm telling on myself. Just like Carl was confessing his speeding problem, I'm confessing my problem with taking pictures. So anyways, I had these wonderful stories about feeding manatees out in the wild, and it was really cool. And so my wife and Kathy, they're anxious, says, well, let's see the pictures. I thought, well, I didn't take any pictures. You know, this wonderful experience. Well, you must have forgot your camera back at the motel. No, I had it with me. Just didn't take it out and use it. So I was under severe warning. If you do this, you take lots of pictures. Well, I look like a tourist everywhere I'm going. I'm holding my camera up, snap, snap. I'm stopping in the middle of the street, snap. Getting honked at by Chicago cab drivers, risking my life to fill the needs for these two women to see pictures of my trip. So I took 134 pictures. And after I went through them and deleted the fuzzy ones, I still had like over 100. So I'm going through all of these pictures. I'm getting to a point here, and this is it. I'm getting to all these pictures, and I noticed something in these pictures. It was amazing to me how many times I saw people in those pictures using smartphones, just like I was, taking pictures or texting somebody or calling somebody. And if it wasn't that, it might have been a laptop. When we're on the train, you know, people were bringing out their laptops and their smartphones, and I'm taking all these pictures of people, and I'm noticing all of these digital devices. And in this conference that I'm at, there's over 1,000 people there, and I noticed it again when we gathered at the conference for these keynote speakers. It was amazing how many people throughout this large audience were on their laptop, on their smartphone, doing various things. Now, sometimes they were, you know, taking notes on them for the conference or different things like that. But, you know, I bet lots of times they weren't. You know, they were texting friends or family and staying in touch and different things like that. And it was just amazing to me. Now, we all see those things. It's kind of part of our culture. And if you look at Kathy, she's being real nervous right now. Oh, yeah, you are. See, Kathy got a new smartphone here a month ago or so. And pictures of Kathy now kind of look like this. Imagine this is a smartphone. I mean, that she's in it all the time. So Tabitha and I have been getting on to her that maybe that smartphone's become a little more important than us. We're kind of jealous. So I said, don't worry about it, Tabitha. I'll address it in today's sermon. You know, that's what we do. We don't have these talks at home. I just bring them up in the sermon. Well, we all do it, though, don't we, at some degrees. I'm just as guilty of it as some people. Not as guilty as Kathy, but as some people. Notice when I start talking about Kathy like that, how I step over here to have something in between us. I'm a smart man. Well, it got me thinking about this. Think of how different the world would be. Think how different the church would be if we work to stay as connected to Jesus as we do to other people. Just let that sink in a little bit. Think of how the world would be different. Think about how the church would be different if we work to stay as connected to Jesus as we stay connected to other humans and to the world through our digital devices. Now, in Kathy's defense, I will say this. She uses her laptop and she uses her smartphone to connect. She has some spiritual connections on that, like I'm sure a lot of you do too. And so there is a means that we can use that technology to be connected spiritually. And amen to that. And I think it's important that we do that. And that's one of the things that Jace has brought to us with a lot of the things we're putting on the internet and different things we're doing, is trying to take advantage of that technology and just how it's a part of our life and being better connected. Now let's get to this. Not only did Paul warn about this disconnect, but Jesus talked about it too. I am the vine and you are the branches. And if a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. John 15 and verse 5 there. I think one of the things that we need to take away from this passage is simply this, that if we want to make a difference for God today, if you want to have fruit in your life that He calls us to have, then we need to stay closely connected to Jesus. Because when we're disconnected from Jesus, and that's what Paul was warning about when he wrote to the Colossians. He said, those false teachers are trying to create disconnect. Because the only way that they can get you to fall for the lies that they're teaching is to disconnect you from the truth. And when they do that, some pretty serious bad things happen to us. And Jesus says it in His own way. I'm the source of life is what He's saying here. And you can't have life when you're apart from me. You can't have success when you're apart from me. Well, I think there's a lot of ways to talk about what we can't have here, but He just simply says, you can do nothing. Period. Apart from me, we can do nothing. Now, I want to be a little bit cautious with this next one. I don't want to come across like I think I'm an expert in dementia or anything like this. I know I've been talking about this a lot, but you guys know me well enough that my sermons come from what's going on in my life lots of times. And right now with my mother being recently placed in hospice, as she's in the late stages of dementia, it just consumes me. We're planning her funeral. We're, doing all those things that families do at this time. And I'm so thankful for your prayers and support at a time like this. But because of this, too, you know, when we as families go through terrible things, when family members get cancer or other, illnesses and things, that's when we become motivated to learn about them, isn't it? And that's what's going on in our lives right now. We're learning a lot about dementia, and I'm so thankful for the seminar that we have coming up. And as I share this too, I just want to promote this seminar that we have coming up, an Alzheimer's and Dementia Support Seminar on September 15th. Guys, raise your hand if you... Well, that's not a fair question. I'll ask it this way. Raise your hand, not counting the church family here, but if you know somebody suffering and dealing with Alzheimer's and dementia outside the church family, raise your hand. You know, I mean, this has become a very personal issue for us, as I talked about last week as well. But let me get back to it. This is a great opportunity again, this seminar, to reach out to the community and say to them, listen, we want to help. We want to help. And this is a big area. So I really want to encourage our support of that. And by the way, I'm walking in that thing. In that, what are we calling that? That walk to find a cure? Walk to end Alzheimer's. And I have a pledge amount I need to reach. So if you'd like to help out with that, let me know. Or the other team as well. One of the things that I've learned about dementia is that it's a problem of with connections. Now, I put in my notes here a lot of things that I was just going to read from the different things that I've read from research and different things, but I'm just going to give it to you in layman's terms rather than read this to you. But that term dementia is kind of an umbrella term. It just covers a lot of different things. But basically what dementia is the brain is dying. Little pieces and places at a time. Brain cells are literally dying. And what happens within the dementia patient, if you were to take pictures of their brain as they progress through the diseases, and that dementia refers to various diseases that take place, brain diseases that are killing the brain. Now, the most common disease is Alzheimer's, okay? But if you were to, what's happening is, as those brain cells die, the brain literally shrinks. So you can literally take pictures of the brain and see it getting smaller and smaller. And when you see examples of that, the difference is really quite striking by the time a person gets into the late stages of dementia. And so as those brain cells die, what happens is information can't travel anymore. Our brains are a wonderful organ that has within it lots of connections. We call them dendrites and neurons and different things that connect. And as learning takes place, those connections are made. And what happens with in dementia patients is as those cells die, those connections are lost. And it's kind of interesting what happens. For example, here's a good example of how you can relate to this. Has somebody ever asked you a question and you knew the answer? You know the answer, but you can't say it. And we say things, oh, it's on the tip of my... Yeah. And it's there, and give us a few minutes, and oh, there it finally comes. Or in some cases, for me, it seems like a couple of days, you know. And it finally comes to you. Well, that's on the early onset of dementia, that's what's happening. Those connections have been diminished or eliminated. And so that information's there, but they just can't get it to where they need to get it, whether it's to say something or do something, to recall something, and it's not there. And so what the brain does a marvelous, marvelous job of is when one connection is broken, it finds another connection. And when that connection is broken, it finds another one and another one and another one. But unfortunately, what happens is eventually is all the connections are gone. And when that happens, then the ability to bring that information forward is lost as well. It's as if the information is lost. It may still be there, but you can't get it anywhere where you need it anymore. The brain can't send the signals anymore to tell your body what to do, to tell your arms what to do, to tell your legs what to do, to tell your mouth what to say. And that just becomes more and more evident as those connections are lost. Remember, what's today's lessons about? It's about what? Connections, the importance of connections. And that's the problem with dementia. We lose those connections. Now, in education and learning over the last couple of decades, we've learned some amazing things about learning. And one of the things we've learned is that in the process of learning, when we expose our students to new information, that starts building connections in the brain. Now, if you're in one of my schools, one of the things that you'll hear my teachers talking about is talking to their students about building onto their schema. It's almost like we try to create the picture of building scaffolding in our head. And so as we share information with students, as we, through lessons, create opportunities for students to engage in information, they make connections in their brain. And what we learned is that's so important about learning being, or I should say it like this, education being compatible with the brain, is we've learned that we have to create multiple experiences for students to engage with the information so that they can create multiple connections. Because the more the connections, the better they're going to do at recalling that information when they need to use it. Like on a test. How many of you got through college studying the night before? How many of you are willing to raise your hand? Yeah, I got to admit, I did that once in a while. We called it cramming. And you know what? If I crammed close enough to the test, I probably did okay. But if that test would have been given the next day, how do you think I would have done? Terribly. We see this every week in public schools where they focus on doing spelling tests on a weekly basis. Because basically what happens in that week's time is kids are cramming, if you will. You know, they're forcing themselves to be able to memorize those words that they got on Monday, and we're going to do the test on Friday, and a lot of them will ace that test because, you know, they've gotten good, they've gotten a system, they know what they need to do to be able to regurgitate those words correctly on Friday, and that's really what it is, regurgitating. I know it sounds a little gross, but it's what it is. But guess what we've learned? If we give them that test on Monday then, they don't get the A again. Why? Because they haven't made enough connections. In other words, it's just a way to say they really didn't learn it. They were able to put themselves in a circumstance where they could pull it forward for a brief period of time. But I've got to ask you, is that real learning then if they can't do it again in a week or 3 weeks or in a month? And in education, we're realizing that's just not the way it is. So it's about having multiple experiences, but also different types of experiences. And that's one of the things we talked about in our learners workshop that we did here earlier this year back in April. And so dementia comes along and it just starts breaking up all of those connections, those things that you've learned, and then that information is no longer useful. So I ask us this question then, where are your strongest connections? It's been kind of interesting as we've watched my mother progress through this terrible disease to see what she lost. You know, first it was confusion and just not being able to stay on track of a calendar and time and different things like that. And I've shared this with you before, too. On my 50th birthday, I'm the oldest of all the kids. I'm the first grandkid. I'm the first of everybody. I'm kind of special. At least I think so. And so I thought it was kind of a big deal when I turned 50. And I shared this story, so I won't belabor it with you. But we got together and made a big ham dinner to be with my mother. Now, this was before she was placed in the home. She was still in adult foster care at this point, but the dementia had already been diagnosed. She had no idea that her firstborn son was turning 50. And of course, this is in December, December 23rd. And she really really had no idea that it was the holiday season. And so, you know, that was just something that was just kind of lost. And then over time, we've just seen other things lost. You know, we can't talk about her mother anymore, or her grandmother, or all those family ties. My mom was married twice, and I don't think she knows the name of either one of her husbands. Now, the last time I visited her, she did call me by name, but 3 hours later, I was pretty sure she didn't know who I was. But what's been interesting in all of that is Mom's music still seemed to be something she could recall. She wasn't playing the keyboard last time we were together. I mean, we'd go out there and we'd walk with her and put her in front of the piano, and she'd sit down and she'd start playing things. Just amazing. She was always, she's been a musician my whole life and a lot longer before that. And that's kind of the point that I'm making here is when I look at what her strongest connections are, it has been the music. Now, lots of times people will tell you that tends to be true anyways. And it may be because the part of the brain where the music qualities, if you will, are stored, or that those characteristics, that ability, are less affected by the dementia. There seems to be some research that suggests that. But I think for my mom, it goes back to that this has been a part of her life more than anything else. Even more than her boys, her three sons. Even more than her marriages. Even more than her faith. We haven't talked about Jesus for some time. But she's still humming. She's still singing. She used to think she was Tammy Wynette. I'm sure glad she got over that. I don't like Tammy Wynette. I'm sure she's a fine person, but I didn't care for her music. You know, Stand By Your Man, that kind of stuff. Just my observations. Because the connections there were so strong, she still has some of that. She still has some of that. And she still seems to be able to remember her boys' names once in a while. But the music's even stronger than that. So where are your connections? And let's bring this to Jesus. Where are your strongest connections in regard to Jesus? And with that, we ask this question: how are you connected to Jesus? So let's talk about that for a moment. Think about how we're connected to Jesus. Are you connecting to Jesus right now?
Amen.
Only if you're awake. Are you connecting to Jesus right now? Yeah, of course you are. So through worship experiences like this, we connect to Jesus. Through our Bible study, whether we're coming together and you know, participating in a class or the studying that you do on your own. Prayer is a time when we connect to Jesus. Fellowship with Christians. Ministry. Serving others. Outreach. Evangelism. Obedience. Jesus talks a lot about that in John chapter 15. I mean, that's a good reading in regards to our topic today. You know, it caused me to bring up the question when we think about how often the church is gathering. You know, three times a week, most weeks. You know, this week being an exception with our potluck, but we have that fellowship today. I think it's an important time to be together. Do we really need to be together three times a week? You know, I mean, that's an interesting question. And I don't mean to open up a can of worms. Does God require it? I don't think I can go to any text in the Bible and say that God says you got to be here 3 days a week. But as I think about how important it is to be making connections in regards to our spiritual strength, well, that's a whole other picture now. Now, let me say this too. I am not saying this to make anybody feel guilty. I understand that there are employment obligations and different things like that that for some of us it makes it impossible. Myself included in that. Last Wednesday night I missed because of our open house at school. I had to think about what it was. Our open house at school. And we'll have things that will come up that keep me from being here. So I'm not saying this to make anybody feel guilty. I just simply want to make this point. How are we connecting to Jesus? And think about all of these things that we do and how important they are. These experiences, these spiritual experiences that we have being together in fellowship. And I've often said, I think the time that we spend together outside of this building, not to take away from the worship experience, though, is so important to our, at least it has been to me, to my spiritual development. To my strength as a Christian man in a society that doesn't particularly care about Christian characteristics. Anytime, and I think every time we eliminate any opportunity that we have to experience Jesus, we eliminate an opportunity to make a connection. And when we do that, we set ourselves up for failure. We set ourselves up for to be disconnected, if you will, from the very source of eternal life. And just like a dementia patient, you keep breaking down those connections enough, and death occurs. And I believe it's the same thing for us spiritually. You keep eliminating those connections enough, and spiritual death occurs. Again, keep in mind that our spiritual strength and maturity is a factor of our multiple and varied experiences with God, to include all of those things I shared a moment ago and so many more that you're probably thinking of. But we need to realize if that's true, then the opposite is true as well. And I want us to ask and answer this question of ourselves. Are we at risk? You know, we all face those detours in life. And if you've been traveling in and out of this town this summer with the road construction, those detours are frustrating, aren't they? But sometimes, as Paul warned in Colossians chapter 2, as Jesus warned in John 15, we get on those detours and we don't get back. And what's happening is we're diminishing the opportunity to have those connections, to have those opportunities to grow in our strength, if you will, our spiritual strength. The lesson's yours. And the question I ask is simply this. Is it time to reconnect? If it's time to reconnect, the invitation's for you. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song of encouragement?